Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Wednesday afternoon, July 10th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. Samsung is launching a first-of-its-kind product, the Galaxy Ring. We'll learn about it in our next segment, but right now, we're finding out more about the impact on stores from the proposed merger of the national chains Kroger and Albertsons. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Bert Flickinger, Managing Director at the retail consulting firm Strategic Resource Group in New York. Bert, thank you for joining us today. And I'm going to give you the question that I have been hearing from multiple people since we heard about the spinoff announcement yesterday. This is to CNS Wholesale Grocers. They are the operators of Piggly Wiggly grocery stores, the closest of which are in Wisconsin. And but the Mariano's name is part of this deal. So the question that a lot of people here has is, does that mean that these Mariano's stores, 31 of them that are being spun off, will they just retain their name and branding? And as far as the grocery consumer is concerned, you're not going to see this merger at all.
Rob, it's very possible that the Mariano's name stays, to your point. Still needs to be worked out with the Federal Trade Commission and the State Attorney General in the state of Illinois as well as Wisconsin. But, Rob, the key thing is CNS is a very well-capitalized buyer. We've worked with them in the Southeast to turn around companies. We've worked with them in California to turn around companies, and they're buying, to your point, Rob, a very good company in Mariano's, and it'll be good for consumers with competitive low prices, and it'll be good for workers who retain his or her job, whether it's UFCW Local 881 or 1546 or Teamsters or Bakers too.
And you're outlining some of the opposition to this merger, because you have some state governments, you also have labor unions that are opposing this deal, saying this is just more concentration in the grocery space that will lead to higher prices for consumers. But from the Kroger and Albertsons point of view, they're looking at it as our competition is Costco, our competition is Amazon, the competition is Walmart and Target, and that it's not the old days anymore. It's not the old days of Jewel competing against Dominick's.
Rob, you're completely correct. It's Costco, it's Aldi, it's Amazon, it's Walmart, it's Target, too. And, Rob, just look at the nearby suburb, the WBBM of Naperville, a town of 150,000 people, two Costcos, both of which in meat alone do 500,000 to 1 million per week per Costco in meat sales. That's staggering, record-breaking both in the state, the country, and worldwide. So you're right, Rob. The competitions, the wholesale clubs, the super centers, and the extreme value food retailers like Aldi and Trader Joe's, which was co-founded by my great uncle. But there's plenty of competition, and it's good for Chicago, it's good for Illinois, it's good for Milwaukee, and it's good across America.
And if we're going to game out the landscape when this is all said and done, does this mean that the Mariano stores that are not included in the sale to CNS Wholesale Grocers, does that mean they will become Jewel food stores when all is said and done? And obviously the Jewels that are being sold, they will have a new name when this if this merger is completed.
Jewel, yes, Rob, and from our work in California, it's quite conceivable that Kroger and CNS could maintain the Mariano's name. For example, in Food for Less in California, CNS has the license to Food for Less and is quite successful working with independently owned and operated Food for Less stores. And Kroger, Rob, also has Food for Less corporate chain stores, so it's conceivable that the same could happen for Mariano's. The key thing is the stores will be well staffed, well capitalized, well maintained, and competitively priced. And whether it's mom or grandma or the sons and daughters of your listeners, they'll have good fresh food. And Rob, the key thing is that the city and the state have subsidized Walmart, the wealthiest family in the country, $77 million to build stores only to close them, something similar to Amazon. Kroger, C&S, Albertsons, they buy stores, keep them open. The best example is Roundy's Mariano's. To your point, Rob, the prior owner of Roundy's failed in Minnesota and Minneapolis, St. Paul. Kroger comes to the rescue a few years later. And saves Roundy's and Mariano's in Chicago, where their sister company, Rainbow Foods, which was number two in Minneapolis, St. Paul, failed. So this is all good for Chicago and very welcome news for consumers, especially with 65% living paycheck to paycheck and Kroger and C&S lowering prices consistently year over year.
Bert Flickinger, Managing Director, Retail Consulting Firm Strategic Resource Group in New York. Thanks for joining us today.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Samsung has launched its Galaxy Ring, which utilizes smart technology. Let's find out what it can do from Jennifer Jolly, Tech Life columnist for USA Today, founder, editor-in-chief of Techish.com in San Francisco. Jennifer, thank you for joining us today. And in the world of mobile phones, Samsung and its Galaxy, it's one of the heavy hitters in the mobile phone space. So in some ways, it's not very surprising. It's jumping into the wearable space as well.
Yeah, it's not surprising. We've known they were working on a ring for quite some time. This is a $400 device. It's a ring that you wear 24/7, except, of course, for when you have to charge it. This one specifically tracks your sleep, heart rate, exercise. It says the Galaxy Ring can detect the kind of workout or activity a person is doing and automatically record that, of course, into an app on your smartphone. And this one also can track menstrual cycles by using skin temperature. That's an interesting take and one that a lot of women, of course, have been, that's led them to look at these smart rings. But it's also led to some controversy about where that information then goes. So there's some pros and cons to all of this.
And with any wearable device that promises to track your health, you bring up a very good point, and that is about data security, because it is medical information. And in this country, there are a lot of legal steps in place to keep that information private. But as we know, if it's in the cloud, someone's trying to find it.
Yeah, and last year, the UK, and they are, you know, Europe, a lot of places around the globe are ahead of where we are in America with security and information security specifically. But last year in the UK, the Information Commissioner's Office launched a review of period and fertility tracking apps over specific data security concerns. So that is something that, especially given the insurance market in this country, that we do have to be aware of. On the device maker's side, you know, people are holding on to their smartphones longer, and smartphone sales have dipped. They're making a slight recovery now, but they're really looking for add-on electronics. This is a $400 add-on. They're hoping people will add to that Samsung Galaxy ecosystem, along with the smartwatch, the phone, the tablet, and now a smart ring to track your health.
And speaking of the Samsung ecosystem, how large is this ecosystem? Is it merely limited to Samsung portable devices? Because they also make refrigerators and washer dryers. So can you also can you check on your heart rate with the Samsung wearable and change the settings on your ice machine at the same time?
Not that I know of. You know, I think before they do the entire ecosystem through your ring, and there are smart rings that help you control other devices, but this particular one, before it tells your washer, you know, your washing machine or your refrigerator to do something, I think what would be better is if you could use it to turn your lights on or off. That may or may not be coming. This is more of a niche health product, but also, the reason why so many of us use our watches to track our health and fitness is because there's that little tiny screen on there, so we can get real-time reactions to things, so I know how fast I'm running, what my mile splits are. You can't do that on these rings. There is no monitor. There is no screen. there's monitoring elements to it, but no screen. So I think before it integrates with all of our Samsung smart things, they should work on a little tiny screen on that.
Jennifer Jolly, Tech Life columnist for USA Today, founder, editor-in-chief of Techish.com in San Francisco. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, a new way for companies to help foster employee satisfaction.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
A new work perk allows employees to merge business and pleasure. Let's discuss bleisure travel with Heather Larson, president and CEO of Meet Chicago Northwest. Heather, thank you for joining us today. Now, I think if throughout the history of business travel, there's people always find some time, even if they have a busy schedule of meetings or conferences, to engage in the pleasures of the principality. But this is above and beyond just going to a nice restaurant and seeing a show at your business destination.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on the show. Excited to talk about this new trend in bleisure travel. Maybe not so new. I think people have been doing it for a few years, certainly pre-COVID, but it has definitely exploded with the flexibility in the way we work today.
And this is it's bleisure travel because your employer is somewhat involved in the process, because in the old days or traditionally there would be kind of a separation between church and state, between what the company is willing to pay for and what you have to pay for yourself. I mean, they'll pay for the flight, they pay for the hotel, but there are some things you have to pay for. But now it seems like the company is willing to pick up the tab on some of these bleisure activities, these bleisure travel activities.
On some of it, corporations are still finding their way on how to, you know, certainly there's a risk management just in case something were to happen to the employee or the spouse of the employee who may be joining. But for the most part, after the conference or whatever you're traveling for ends is when the employee then starts picking up the tab. So having those policies in place is definitely crucial so that there isn't any confusion when the expense reports get submitted.
And then you have some knowledge in setting up these events. What does a 2024 bleisure travel adventure look like?
Well, for us here in the Northwest suburbs, obviously, we are very much a business destination. Our hotels cater towards that business conference, visitor, sales meetings, all that kind of thing. But, or should I say, and we have a lot of family-friendly attractions for folks to take advantage of. So about 50% of your bleisure travelers do have family at home, and 50% of our travelers are female. And so maybe the husband comes along, brings the kids to Woodfield Mall or Legoland during the day, and then mom catches up with them in the evening, or better yet, what we like to see as an extension of that stay. Maybe they come in early on Sunday, Monday, if the conference is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, which is fairly typical. They come in early or they stay later and enjoy those attractions, maybe going to the city for the day, that kind of a thing. That's what it looks like for us here in the Northwest suburbs.
And then very quickly, Heather, you know, what's the win for the company in terms of does it just added productivity from happier employees?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're all fighting for workforce. We're looking for employees. We're looking to keep employees happy that we have. And when you ask an employee to travel on business, it's disruptive. It is time away from family and friends often. So if you can add this little perk in and make it work and make it fair, it certainly adds to that employee satisfaction as well as luring new employees to your business.
Heather Larson, president and CEO of Meet Chicago Northwest, thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Personal Finance Wednesday, taking an aggressive approach to funding your retirement.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. We could learn more today about the death of a Chicago pastor found inside his car in the Des Plaines River. Members of Congress are huddling with world leaders during the NATO summit in Washington. In Personal Finance Wednesday, taking charge of retirement, even when you still have years of work ahead. And there's growing taste around the country for Chicago food favorites. WBBM business. The markets are higher. The Dow is up 205 points. The NASDAQ is up 169. The S&P 500 is up 37. We have 78 degrees right now in Chicago under partly sunny skies, going up to 81 today. Cooler, breezy, intervals of clouds and sunshine. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. An autopsy is scheduled today for a clergyman from Chicago whose car was pulled from the Des Plaines River in Will County yesterday. 53-year-old Warren Beard was a married father of five. He disappeared last week after visiting a friend in Joliet. Shanahan Fire Chief John Petrakis helped with the search and has seen video of the car entering the water.
The only discernible object is a vehicle leaving Brandon Road and falling into the river. That's all we can tell. We can't tell if there was anybody else behind him or if there was another vehicle at the top side of the Brandon Road. We can only see the vehicle coming off the road and falling into the Des Plaines River.
Beard was an assistant pastor at the New Israelite Missionary Baptist Church. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell are meeting with world leaders who are in Washington for the NATO summit. Another one-to-one talk will feature Ukrainian President Zelensky and House Speaker Mike Johnson. CBS's Nicole Killian is on Capitol Hill.
There has not been another push for additional aid as of yet by the White House, but it does certainly remain a concern as this war continues to drag on. So I imagine that the Ukrainian president will likely try to get that clarity from the speaker as well.
The summit is celebrating NATO's 75th anniversary. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. The markets are higher. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Matt Shapiro, president, MWS Capital in Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us today. And I guess in the world of financial analysis, Matt, you can never really take a victory lap, and that really seems to be the case in the fight against inflation, where it appears that the 2% target is in sight, the soft landing is indeed possible, and now we're talking about another risk factor, and that maybe the Fed could cut rates too late and that the economy could deteriorate.
You know, investors oftentimes, unfortunately, even with the market doing really well today and the Dow responding as well, investors, unfortunately, oftentimes take a look at the glass half empty. But I thought Powell's prepared remarks and his testimony to Congress were very good. Tremendous progress. Inflation has come down to about 2.6%. If we have a good inflation report tomorrow, it sets the stage potentially for a rate cut signal at the next Fed meeting. So we'll see what happens. You know, truly the jobs report of last Friday was pretty good. But as you said, you know, hey, maybe we're too weak or something. You know, a lot of hiring in government and healthcare, but industrials, mining, extraction, things like that, the fundamental part of the economy has been kind of flat. So, of course, when the Fed cuts rates, people will be like, well, are they not cutting enough? But just one other uncertainty and factor typical of investing.
And so this is something that Fed Chair Powell said in his testimony, is that the job market is not necessarily weakening. It's just going back to the way things were in 2019, which can be kind of hard to grasp after a head spinning 4 years.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, working downtown Chicago, people might be seeing people coming back. Certainly getting downtown is very difficult. The offices, at least the nicer ones, I mean, obviously there's higher vacancy rates. People do work from home now. They're this hybrid environment. But some coming back to normal. Obviously, everyone is doing very well. Travel is up. You know, airplane, a billion people are going to be flying an airplane in the United States this year. So the economy is doing very well. Just, of course, we have uncertainty, as always, you know, with the election. But, you know, look at the S&P 500 up real big this year, all those big technology winners. So the market is doing great.
Earnings season starts this week. The big banks report before too long. And what are you looking for out of the big banks, the big financial institutions, what their read on the economy?
Well, they're going to have to give an assessment, like where are their loss reserves, you know, which is important for these big banks. You know, where do they see the credit standing of the consumer? People will certainly take clues from that. A caution about bank earnings. They can come out with great earnings and the stocks can fall. It's very difficult to discern, you know, how the stocks are going to react to any particular earnings. But overall, earnings season should be quite good for the second quarter, between 6-9% growth for all sectors of the market, depending on which report you read. Now, obviously, the super companies are going to lead that earnings growth. What I'm looking for outside of the bank sector and the financials is earnings growth spreading to the medium and smaller companies that make up a large part of the investable market, but maybe haven't done as well this year as, you know, the big stocks like NVIDIA, Apple, Microsoft.
Matt Shapiro, President, NWS Capital in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, taking charge of your retirement.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. An aggressive early approach can create big returns in retirement. Let's discuss some winning strategies with Shane Gornick, partner and certified financial planner at Forefront Financial Planning in Lyle. Find him online at preparemyretirement.com. Shane, thank you for joining us today. And let's talk about preparing my retirement, the royal my retirement, in that discussion. And how many times have you heard over the course of your career from a client, you're trying to get them back on the track or maybe make up for some lost time? How many times have you heard someone say, if only I started saving sooner?
Way more often than you would think, which is a lot.
And
let's put it this way, Rob. I've never had a client tell me at retirement that they wish they'd saved less when they were younger.
So if you start saving, and this is good advice for people who may have just graduated from college a couple of months ago or a couple of weeks ago, and they're getting ready for that first big boy or big girl job in corporate America that actually comes with benefits and a salary, and there is the option to start saving in the company retirement plan, and the temptation exists if you're in your early 20s to say, well, maybe I'm not going to set aside several hundred dollars per pay period for my retirement. I can take care of that later because that several hundred dollars can be better spent at brunch on the weekend. And what's your message to that person who's kind of hesitant about investing in their company's retirement program?
Great question. And while I have nothing against brunch, I will say that they are missing out. So just to put things in perspective, if someone's 25 years old and assuming that they're getting like a 7% rate of return, if they want to have $1 million by age 65, they're going to have to save $381 a month. If they were to wait to start at age 35, it's $820 a month to get that same million. And at 45, it's $1,920 per month to get to that same $1 million. So the cost of waiting is real. It's easy to say save early, and I can put it off, and I have time when I'm later on, when I'm closer to retirement, and when I'm making more money. But really, you know, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars per month of difference to get to that same goal just by delaying.
And then how many clients, I mean, would you say are the straight A students? They actually start saving the moment they have that first job with benefits and a retirement plan coming out of college. And they're set up, they're doing it 23, 24, 25 years old, but they really want, they want more than that $1 million that comes at age 65. Do you counsel being aggressive in your 20s, or is that, can you channel that energy into something more productive?
Yeah, you can absolutely be more aggressive in that savings. And I know you and I, Rob, we weren't rolling in the dough in college. I know as a college student, I was eating ramen noodles and you know, pinching my pennies, so to speak. So when you go from being used to that to then all of a sudden getting an income, whatever that income is, most people right out of college, that's the most money they've ever had in their life up to that point. And it's so much easier to just try to maintain that tradition, that transition. And I'm not saying just eat ramen noodles, but what I am saying is you're used to having low expenses and low income, and to live off of that or something close to that early on, it makes for a much bigger transition. Once you start to have that lifestyle creep where people are looking to spend more money because they're making more money, it becomes much harder for them to back off, especially if, you know, there's a marriage or kids or other financial obligations down the road, it's the ideal time to do that.
This dovetails nicely, I think, with a conversation we had earlier in the week about teaching your incoming college freshmen some good basic lessons about budgeting, so you don't go nuts when you don't have mom and dad there telling you you can't spend money on something. And this is the companion to that. Once you're out and once you're in the real world and you make that transition from going from no money to having some money, that also, you know, if you're irresponsible, that can cause problems too.
It sure can. Far more than most people think at that time.
Shane Gornick, partner and certified financial planner, Forefront Financial Planning in Lyle. Thank you for joining us today. Find him online, preparemyretirement.com. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. And still to come, Chicago favorite Portillo's continues its out-of-state expansion. The popular Chicago restaurant chain Portillo's is opening its second location in Michigan. It's just part of the expansion of local food favorites to other parts of the country. We welcome in Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the restaurant coach in Chicago. Izzy, thank you for joining us today. And is this a common practice in the restaurant industry where that restaurants branch out, or maybe chefs chase the people who have moved away either through retirement or for other reasons?
Well, certainly Portillo's has the magic for that. They have moved to Florida, other places. So they are truly going where the customers have gone. And whereas other places, other operations pick and choose where they go and develop their concept. But for Chicago restaurants, not quite as hard as other places because everybody knows Chicago.
And the latest example of Portillo's moving out and beyond the Chicago area is now Portillo's is opening its second location in Michigan. And that does make sense because a lot of Chicagoans either have second homes in Michigan or travel through Michigan on the way to a vacation house, theirs or somebody else's. So if you're a Chicagoan on the road, it's very nice to see a familiar sign along the way.
It is, and it's really funny. Last night, my daughter had a friend arrive from New York City, and first thing I said is, where would you like to eat when you're in Chicago? He's never been here before, and Portillo's was choice number one.
It's interesting, though, because we have word that Ford's Garage, which is a Detroit-based restaurant, is setting up shop in the Chicago area. And now we have Portillo's setting up shop in the Detroit area. So there seems to be some sort of equilibrium or balance of local favorites moving to some other Midwestern outpost.
Absolutely. And it's, those kind of places in larger cities that have great reputations, when they move to another big city, the real foodies are out there looking for it and running to try it. So it's a good formula. But as I say, when it comes to Chicago restaurants, we're famous for our beef and pizza and other great foods. And I think it travels a little bit better than other cities that happen to come here.
And we have stories about Rainbow Cone and Buona Beef are expanding into Florida and Arizona. And I remember going to Disney World. This was 30 years ago. And there was a Pizzeria Uno on the Walt Disney World property or not too far away from it. So this isn't a new practice by any stretch of the imagination.
No, and it goes as far. It's funny that you say that. I was in London about 30 years ago, and Uno's was there and jam-packed. The Europeans were waiting for Chicago pizza to finally come to them.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's familiar to us, but it's exotic cuisine if you do live in Europe. Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the restaurant coach in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. If you missed any part of today's show, just go to our stream and skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the Odyssey app.